Hey everyone, welcome back to the Physician Syndicate podcast. I'm your host, Ronak, and today we've got a very special episode. We've got the CEO of a company called Crowd Health, Andy Schoenever. Andy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, great. So maybe do you want to kick us off on just telling us a little bit about your background and how you got to Crowd Health?
Yeah, I've been in healthcare for almost 20 years. My first gig out of business school was doing remote patient monitoring. So we were monitoring blood pressure and blood sugars and weight and things like that out of people's homes, primarily folks with chronic conditions, Medicare Advantage type of population. And so if they gained 3 pounds overnight and had congestive heart failure, we knew something was going on. They weren't taking their meds or they ate something they weren't supposed to eat. And so we would get involved and help them manage their condition more effectively. Ran that for about 7 years, sold it. And then the healthcare space, especially selling to health plans, was hard. So I was like, I'm never going to do that again. That's so difficult. Never going to do healthcare again. But here I am back into healthcare. You're just called to it. But yeah, came out of that. And as most of us get our health insurance through our employers. And since I wasn't employed any longer, I didn't have health insurance. So I went to healthcare.gov. I thought it was my only option. And a joke, it worked until I had to use it. My wife and I had two little girls, one of which was real little. She was one. Having recurring ear infections, as if any of your listeners, I'm sure there are, or parents, like, you know what that's. Lots of middle of the night kind of complaining about ears and things like that. Finally went to the ear, nose, and throat doctor who said she had a perforated eardrum. And so we needed to get tubes in her ears. So we went to the local hospital, got tubes in her ears. And a 15-minute procedure, got the bill a few weeks later, and it was $8,000. I was just like, wow, $8,000. And it was like, okay, this is what health insurance is for. I didn't really think about it. And then I got a note a few weeks later from the health insurance plan. Again, this was a healthcare.gov plan. And they said it was medically unnecessary, and so they weren't going to pay for it. So I went through two rounds of my ear, nose, and throat doc talking to them, and my ENT was so worried about her hearing that he delayed his vacation by a day just to do it. And even then, the health plan refused to pay for it. So I had to stroke an $8,000 check to the local hospital. And I was ticked, as you can probably imagine. And I quit health insurance. Mm-hmm. Have been uninsured for, I think, about 3 years now, maybe a little over 3 years. And we started building some tools as a family just to say, how do you do this? Like, how do you operate outside of health insurance? Just because we're all just programmed to say, you got to have health insurance. You can't be uninsured. Right. And so we saved $10,000 the first year that we did it. And we were like, I bet you other people would be interested in this too. So we started Crowd Health, which is the culmination of that building of these tools. So that's how we came to the Crowd Health. We've been running that for a couple of years now. It's been a ton of fun, and happy to get more into what we do at Crowd Health. But that's the story of my healthcare background.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. So basically the insurance company denied the claim. So you had to pay $8,000 out of pocket. And I'm guessing the insurance company, these are not medical experts. Like the doctor that you were going to was actually saying that this is a necessary procedure, and still it got denied. That just sounds like such a gap in the market that it should be the medical experts that are making that determination. Mm-hmm. And having that dichotomy of the medical expert telling you to do the procedure, but then the insurance company is telling you that it's not necessary, that just doesn't seem to make sense.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And that's why, as you did more research on this, Kaiser Family Foundation did a study on healthcare.gov plans and found that 48 million claims last year, I think it was 2021. So maybe a year ago, 48 million claims were denied by health plans. And that's a lot. People buy health insurance thinking that they are going to get their bills covered, but in fact, they don't. They don't get their bill covers in many cases. And that's ultimately, it's leading to bankruptcies. You know, I've been very fortunate in my life. I can stroke an $8,000 check.
Right.
But the vast majority of Americans, 90%+ of people can't come up with $8,000 in any reasonable period of time. And so they're going bankrupt instead. And I was just like, it's a tragedy that people are not taking advantage of the system. They're getting ear tubes for their kid because their kid can't sleep and has a hole in their ear, right? This is not moral hazard. It's not anything, but just like the healthcare expenses are so high, the deductibles are so high, and these health plans deny a lot of these claims. It's just really a tragedy.
I think we all know that the health insurance industry is just very profit driven. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're just looking at their bottom line, and if they can get away with not paying out a claim, hey, they're looking at that as a victory. They're not thinking about the actual patients and the actual people that are suffering because of it.
Sure. There's been a couple interesting articles that have come out the last 3 or 4 months. One was on Cigna and one was on United Healthcare, where they allegedly just deny claims without really looking at them. And then you'll only really take a close look at them if people come back and try to defend that claim. There's some dirty stuff going on. And look, I think that the biggest challenge here is that we have a principal agent problem, where our health insurance company is supposed to be our agent. They are supposed to be on our team, getting us good pricing so that we can get these bills paid. But in fact, what is happening is the health insurance plan, your audience is full of doctors. They know this, so I'm preaching to the choir, but it's premiums in versus claims out. The difference of that is profit. They are then incentivized for premiums to go up. They're incentivized for claims to go down, both of which are not in my best interest. And so we really do have a principal agent problem here, and we need to change it. We need to change the system.
Andy, can you maybe talk a little bit about CrowdHealth specifically? So for example, right now I pay around, I think, $400 a month for my health insurance with Kaiser. What would that look like if I was going over to CrowdHealth? How would I still get my medical attention taken care of?
Yeah, each one of our members pays $175 a month. If you're a family of four or more, it's $695. And what the way that we work is you take that $175 and we open up an account for you when you start CrowdHealth. So that $175 goes into an account. We take out $50 of that. That's our subscription fee. The remaining $125 stays in that account. And then we've got now thousands of people who we can access or ask to help you if you have a health event. Let's just say you break your leg. And it's $5,000. We'll ask you to take the first $500 of those bills, $500 worth of those bills, before you contribute the rest to crowdfunding. So the $4,500, we'll go to just say 45 people and ask them for $100 each. And if they say yes, then $100 goes from their account to your account. And so ultimately, at the end of the day, you'll have enough money to pay for your broken leg. The key here, though, is that you're going to be able to pay for that broken leg in cash at the point of care. So these doctors, they don't have to fight health insurance companies. They don't have to get pre-auths. They don't have to wait for their money. Oftentimes, you're waiting 60 or 90 days to get paid by these health insurance plans. You're getting paid on the day. The transaction is between you and your patient. There's no health insurance plan in the middle. And so these docs are willing to give us, or our members, significant discounts because it's way easier.
Interesting.
And so that's ultimately why this model works. So I don't know, your $400 was for a single individual?
That's right.
Yeah, this would be less than half of that. And the reason why is because we're getting way better pricing than health insurance plans do. I joke with people, I say, you as an individual actually have more negotiating power against these big hospital systems than United Healthcare. And the reason I say, and you'd think United Healthcare, which I think is like the sixth or seventh largest company on the planet by revenue, they go in, and I live in Austin, Texas. There's two big hospital systems in Austin, St. David and Ascension Seton. And so United comes in and says, hey, I want to reduce the price. And both those hospitals are like, nah, we're not doing that. Because if you lose one of us, you're going to lose the Austin market, because both want access. Everybody in Austin wants access to both of those systems. So United Healthcare really doesn't have a whole lot of negotiating power against what in essence is a duopoly in Austin. If I go in as an uninsured individual and I have a procedure, I can negotiate and say, hey, I'll pay you in cash today. Will you take a better rate? And we are getting way better rates than United Healthcare and the vast majority of our members' health events. That's the big difference. Cash pay is king in healthcare, as we're finding.
So are you also working with companies and employers, right? A lot of people get their health insurance through their employers and not just paying out of pocket on the side. Or are you specifically targeting folks that are paying for their own health insurance?
We're focused on yes and yes. We're focused on people who are paying for their own health care. However, about 20% of our customers have opted out of their corporate health benefits. And I think it's two reasons. One is I think actually we can provide them way better care than their corporate health plan. And second is people don't want to be handcuffed to their employer for health benefits. Mm-hmm. I saw a study, it was maybe a year old now, but there's 4 million people that would do something entrepreneurial if it wasn't for their current employer's health benefits. And so in essence, what you're doing is you're staying with your company only because of the health benefits. And so we're like, no, we want you to have the opportunity to go and do something entrepreneurial. That's the American dream. And so come with us and go and explore something entrepreneurial. And now you have a plan. It's not an insurance plan. It's an alternative that is viable. And we think we're fueling some entrepreneurship in many places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if there are any physicians listening that are thinking about starting their own company, we'll definitely leave the website to Crowd Health in the show notes to check out. This might be an interesting way to make sure your health insurance is taken care of, or at least that side of life is taken care of, so you can focus on the more entrepreneurship endeavors. And then just turning it around for a second.
Like the trend in medicine, as we're seeing, is these big hospital systems are sucking up these doctors, right? Because of health insurance, primarily. The hospital systems get better rates. It's hard for independent doctors to survive. Any doctor listening to this and are like, man, I want to go back and be an independent doc, break from the system, go back, be an independent doc, start your own practice. You can have healthcare through Crowd Health. We'd love to have you. And in fact, I think the second largest group of people within Crowd Health are healthcare professionals. Interestingly enough, we have entrepreneurs is number one and healthcare professionals is number two. That includes doctors and nurses. So, you know, we'd love to have you and allow you to get back to the entrepreneurial spirit of owning your own practice.
That's so cool. Do you have any sort of metrics on how many users you have, how many employees you have, just trying to get a sense of the size and scale of the company?
Yeah, we're up to 3,500, just short of 3,500 members. Wow. We'll hit 3,500 this month. So yeah, 3,500 members. We've got almost 20 employees. Oh. We do a lot of, I think it's important to know that this is not just about paying, getting the big bills paid, but we also offer as a part of our service negotiation services. So any big bill that you have or will have, so like for a planned surgery, an ACL surgery, for example, we'll pre-negotiate those on your behalf. If you go to the ER, we'll negotiate those for you as well. So we offer all of those services as a part of our plan. When you join, you get complete access to talk therapy. So a counselor, if you want to talk to a counselor, which a lot of people really like, primary care, virtual primary care, virtual urgent care. So we're really trying to provide a lot of tools for people to really operate out, to build a parallel health system, if you will, to the one that most folks are accustomed to.
Yeah, very cool. And then if we turn around for a second, if you're the physician and you have a patient that's out at Crowd Health, is there any sort of difference? Should a physician be more excited to work with a patient that's working with you versus United Healthcare or anything else like that?
Yeah, I think that the physicians can answer this probably better than I can, but all of our interactions with physicians have been extremely positive. They're like, please send me more people. How do I get more people up from Crowd Health? Because I want to get paid in cash as opposed to having to bill health insurance, as opposed to having to ask the health insurance company if I can do a certain procedure or whatever with their patient. We firmly believe that the medicine should be between the doctor and the patient without a health insurance plan getting in the middle. That's what y'all went to medical school for. It's what you're skilled at, way more skilled than a health insurance company to tell, you know, your patient what they should or should not do. We think a doctor should be super excited to work with us because you're getting cash at the point of care without having to bill health insurance. That's great from all sides, I think. Yeah. The only people that like Crowd Health probably more than our members is the doctors from everything that we've seen.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really cool. Also curious to get your take on that. So, you know, you're CEO of this company. How are you thinking about running the company and just like managing it? Have you taken on like external institutional capital? Are you guys self-funding it yourselves? Are you thinking about marketing, product? Like, where are you trying to spend most of your time as CEO? Like, how does that get distributed amongst all the different things going on at the company?
Yeah, we have raised capital. We've raised $12 million over two rounds. And that capital is to fund the operations of the business. None of that money is going into paying bills. It's all to fund operations. And so that has taken place over the last two and a half years. We've raised that money. In terms of my day-to-day, I'm focused on customers primarily. How do I care for our members really well? We don't do a ton of advertising. Most of our money is poured into loving on our members. And we think that if you love on your members, you treat them really well, then they'll tell their friends. And that customer acquisition cost is pretty much zero. You tell your buddy that you have a really great experience with Crowd Health, especially when it's in healthcare, which nobody ever goes and says, I love my health insurance company. And while we're not insurance, I just want to make that clear. But like, we have lots of people who are like, we love Crowd Health. This is so different. It's so refreshing. And along with that is one of the things I hated about healthcare, my health insurance plan, was I had to call into this big call center and talk to somebody who had no idea who I was. And then they punted me to somebody else who I had to tell the same story to, and they had no idea. And it's like, you talk to a half a dozen people, your problem doesn't get solved. There's no solution there. And so one of the things we did to Crowd Health kind of along these lines was, every member has a team of two people internally that they talk to. If you were to sign up, today is April 28th. If you call in today, you'll talk to Jasmine or Kelly. They'll be your two advocates internally. So you get to know them. They get to know you. They know to get to know your health event. And so, you know, you have an ally on your side from Crowd Health. And so most of my time is just making sure that our customers are the center of what we do and are happy and get cared for really well. And so I'm a very kind of customer centric CEO. And so then I get to do that. And then I get to talk to folks like you who want to hear more about Crowd Health, which is fun too.
That's very cool. I know Elon Musk is a very controversial figure, but I love how at Tesla, they don't spend any money on advertising. The whole mentality is that doesn't actually improve the product or service. So he wants all the employees to focus on the product and service. And you saying that you're not focusing too much on marketing, that just strikes the same chord, that it really is about the product and service that you're providing to your folks, so that way they can get the best experience possible. And I think that's a great way to create a little bit of competitive edge, that like your product is just better than everybody else's because so much time and attention is there to make it as robust as possible.
Yeah, a very small percentage of the capital that we've raised has gone to advertising, a little bit, but most of we interact a lot with people on social media, Instagram, Twitter, places like that, and they get to know us. And that's how they find out about us. And that's why they sign up, is they get to know us a little bit through some of those social media platforms. So it's a lot of fun. We really enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, very cool. So let's pivot the conversation just a little bit. I know you have an interest in Bitcoin. I'm curious to hear a little bit more on that. In the news, we hear about Bitcoin all the time. Mm-hmm. I think there's something like 10, 20, 30,000 cryptocurrencies out there. Just curious to start getting your initial take on this space.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. A few years ago, I was telling somebody about this idea that I had for Crowd Health. And his name is Jimmy Song. Jimmy is a thought leader within Bitcoin. I was talking about the problem with insurance is that you pay your premium into one of these big insurance companies and they hold it in this big pool of capital. And that pool of capital, especially given inflation, is the value of that money is going down day by day. We're sitting here at, I don't know what the last number was, but 6%. I think when I was talking to Jimmy, it was more like 8 or 9% or something like that. And so you're losing 8 or 9% every year. And as he said, what about if people could hold money in Bitcoin instead? I'm like, huh, interesting. Bitcoin, it has a finite number. Nobody, you can't print anymore. And so there's not going to be an inflationary impact. There's nobody at the center of this that can print more money and make the size. It's stuck at 21 million Bitcoin. And so that was interesting to me. And so and interestingly also is a lot of our initial customers are Bitcoiners. We tend to have a bit of a libertarian kind of trend with anti-big corporations, anti-big government. And so there's a big Bitcoin contingent. And we incorporated Bitcoin into what we do for some of those people, and they really have enjoyed it. So I'm a huge fan of Bitcoin. I think that every currency in the history of our planet has failed at some point, and it has failed soon after being depegged, about 40 to 50 years after being depegged from gold, almost in every situation. We were depegged from gold in the 1970s. Here we are in the 2020s. We're at our 50th year. I think you will see the decline of the dollar, and we're starting to see it here in the next decade. And so I think there's an alternative that is not impacted by any kind of central banking authority, and that is Bitcoin. I truly believe it is the only coin out there that is reputable. I'm a maximalist on the Bitcoin side. That's why we incorporated it into our business model. I want to make one thing clear. We've got a group of people who are operating in dollars. They are their own little crowd. Then we have people who are operating in Bitcoin. They are their own little crowd. So anybody who is not into Bitcoin, which is totally fine. My wife isn't, so I still love you people. You can be in the non-Bitcoin crowd and you can just opt within dollars. We just allow people to hold money in Bitcoin if they want to.
So if we just double click on that Bitcoin angle real quick. So sure. My understanding for gold is that gold is one of the metals that's very difficult to produce more of or take away of. And I think Bitcoin is that same thing. You mentioned a $21 million cap. There's only ever going to be 21 Bitcoin that's ever in existence. And when you compare that to something like the US dollar, the government has the ability to print more and more US dollars. We saw that during COVID, right? When they really wanted to stimulate the economy when everything shut down, they just printed something like, I don't know, 40% more money that was already in existence in a matter of like 12 or 18 months or something like that. So is the thinking here that if the US dollar is facing inflation, so that way the dollar is becoming worth less and less over time, then Bitcoin would be the opposite way, that the higher inflation is, then theoretically Bitcoin would be more valuable over time when you denominate it against the US dollar. Is that how you see it?
And just to clarify, the amount of US currency doubled in 3 years, and over the period of COVID, we have now basically twice as much US currency out there as we had. And so that is a challenge that's inflationary. There's no way to get around it unless the amount of goods is increased by the same amount, which you can't double the amount of goods produced in that same amount of time for the same amount of capital. So it is going to be inflationary. I think we're going to see that inflation over a very long period of time. And so I think the alternative to that is, you can say it's gold, which is fine. I think gold is probably a good asset to be holding, but that is a great store of value. I think it doesn't have any kind of transactional value. If I want to pay somebody $1 million for a house or $500,000 for a house, whatever, I can't have a big pile of gold and move it in. So it's just not a good way of paying for things. Whereas Bitcoin, I can pay for that house within seconds to anybody on the planet. And I can ensure that it gets to the right person in the right account within seconds. And the transaction friction is almost nothing. It's near zero. So it's even better than credit card transfer fees. It's a near zero transaction cost. And so I think if you have something that is stable at 21 million, doesn't change, you can use to transact, I think you've got something special. Now, we got a long way to go because it's not everybody will take Bitcoin. One of the things that we want to do is say, hey, docs, if any of you are interested in taking Bitcoin, then we'd love to be able to pay you in Bitcoin. Our Bitcoin community wants to pay you in Bitcoin if you're interested in that. And one of our ideas here is if we can introduce Bitcoin payment systems into healthcare, which is probably the largest market and on the planet, it's something like $4.6 trillion in the US, which is bigger than every GDP with the exception of US, Japan, and China. By 2030, it will surpass Japan. So it'll be we have the largest GDP other than the US and China. If we can introduce it within that market, then that gives a great benefit to higher usage in other places. So we'd like to see the usage of Bitcoin go up within medicine. That's one of our goals. And I think we'll get there. It'll start at like 1%, you know, hopefully go up to something more significant than that percentage of our transactions so we can get more docs to accept Bitcoin.
Yeah, Andy, let me ask about one of the big pushbacks that I see for Bitcoin is that the volatility is very extreme, right?
Sure.
Even in the last like couple of years, we've seen it go all the way up to 60, 70,000 down to around like 15,000, right? So if you're a physician and you're doing a surgery and asking for $10,000 and you get this asset that's extremely valuable where you don't know if you take this $10,000 like a week, 2 weeks from now, if it gets cut by 20%, like how should one think about that volatility? And maybe at CrowdHealth, that you said that there's a portion of your customers that operate in Bitcoin instead of US dollars. How do you like hedge against the volatility or just take that into account so that way everything at your company still functions properly as it should for the customers?
Sure. Yeah. So let's talk about the volatility real quick in terms of just Bitcoin as a future currency, which is what I think it could be and should be. if you look at the US dollars over the first two decades of its existence, it was pretty dang volatile also. And all of these currencies, when new, have some volatility. Let's look at literally every other currency ever created on this planet has disappeared over a period of time or has been devalued significantly. The longest running currency to date is the British pound. I think it's been around for 1200 years or something like that. It has been devalued by about 90% over the last 100 years. And so that British pound has failed as well. So do you want to put your faith in something that every other one has failed? Or do you want to put your faith in something that no centralized government has control over and will have some volatility in the short term, just like the US dollar did in the first couple of decades of its existence? Look, Bitcoin's only been around for 14 years or something like that, 15 years. So it's still in its infancy. The other thing I would say too is if you look at some of the best performing assets of all time, let's take it Amazon stock, for example. Amazon was down 80% four different times throughout its history. And now it's one of the most valuable companies on the planet. And so you will have some volatility with some of these newer assets. If you are a doctor and want to accept Bitcoin, then I would say is, look, but if you believe in Bitcoin, then I would say keep a percentage of that in Bitcoin. And if you want to transition the rest to cash, if you want to convert the rest to dollars, then transition the rest to dollars to be able to pay for your front desk people and your nurses and things like that. But I think there is a case to be made that some of that should be kept in Bitcoin. So you can convert it almost right away. So there's almost like no conversion risk. So there's a way to do that very, very easily. And if anybody has any questions on this, just email at docs@joincrowdhealth.com. And we're happy to walk through how to do that. Very little conversion risk for the doctors if they want to accept Bitcoin, but they can hold it too if they want it. And then in terms of our Bitcoin crowd that we call it, you know, those people are holding. If you put $175 in, we take 50 out, 125 is left. We're only using about $50 of that 125 for needs of the community. So there's 75 left in there. We allow members to use that 75 and stick it in Bitcoin. And we're never asking for that again. So they can put it in Bitcoin. It does not impact the rest of the community. And interestingly, Bitcoiners are folks who, if Bitcoin goes down, they actually celebrate because they want to buy more. And so this is a long-term play for most people who own Bitcoin. And we all think this may not happen in a year or 2 years, but in the next decade, we think very confidently that Bitcoin, which is sitting as we speak here, just below 30,000, I think, we think it's going to be many multiples higher than that. If you think that's going to be the case over the long term, then you would want to buy more today. So if Bitcoin goes down, that's actually a good thing for our community because people are going to want to buy more. So that's, I think I answered all your questions there, but I'm happy to dive in deeper to any of the ones that you feel like I didn't clarify effectively.
So Andy, you mentioned Amazon stock, right? So if we rewind back to the beginning of the internet, we had things like Netscape and AOL and MySpace, and in addition to the Amazon and Googles. And from what I understand from that time period, it was very difficult to know which were the companies that were going to win over the long term and which ones are going to go away. Fast forward today, I understand Bitcoin's not a company, but still you have something like 10, 20, 30,000 cryptocurrencies out there. I think Bitcoin was the first one. It's currently the biggest, but what gives you confidence that this is the one that's going to be a major player, let's say 50 years from now, and not one of these other thousands of other projects that are out there?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question. And I'm not my apologetics on a Bitcoin are probably not like what Jimmy Song or Robert Breedlove or Safe Dean Amoose or any of those guys who are way better at this than I am. I'm only 2 or 3 years in here. Here's what I would say is one, it is completely decentralized. So there is nobody that individually can change the trajectory of Bitcoin. They can't fork the software individually. You know, for any of these other coins out there, there are significant players in any of those coins, Ethereum included, that can change the trajectory for their good. And so there is a moral hazard here that I think happens with just the human condition where we will do things that benefit ourselves. You cannot do that with Bitcoin. You have to get the vast majority of people who are in Bitcoin to agree with you before you can change. So it is completely decentralized. And I think that is the key reason why Bit will work. It is the most secure computer network in the history of the planet. There has nothing been more secure than Bitcoin. And I think it will continue to be that way. I don't see any way that it's not going to be more secure. I think it's the biggest computer network ever assembled in history. So you have lots of computing power going into this to ensure the security is of the highest. So all of those reasons are why I think Bitcoin is going to be the winner of this. And Satoshi Nakamoto, who nobody knows who that is, but was the founder of Bitcoin, is disappeared. And he's got billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin that he could cash in, but he's totally disappeared and has not touched it. So you have somebody who has the economic incentive to change the system to their benefit, but doesn't, and actually kind of has left it alone and has given it almost as a gift to humanity. And so I think there's something to be said for that. Every government out there, like I said, has the incentive to print money to make taxpayers like you and me happy. That's how they win votes. And we're already, I think, a $1 trillion deficit or approaching it. I don't see that turning around, and you can't continue to do that year, year over year. We have never seen anything like this in the US history, where we're, what are we now, $40 trillion of debt or something like that? It's just in something crazy. And there's no coming back from that, because we are just, our deficits are too much. Like you would have to slash military spending. You would have to slash entitlements. And depending upon what side of the aisle you're talking to, you're not going to be able to do those things. It's just impossible within our legislative environment to do something like that. So I think we're toast, candidly. And so I think Bitcoin is the best option for people to hedge against our human nature of wanting to print more to satisfy our voters.
Yeah. And then do you have any advice that if somebody did want to double down on Bitcoin and just have it part of their personal portfolio or accept it as payment or whatever it is, any just advice on how folks can stay safe? We hear about hacking a lot, these centralized exchanges going down. Just like, how can an individual just make sure that they can protect themselves from all these threats?
Yeah, there's a funny saying within Bitcoin. It says, not your keys, not your coins. And what that means is that if you don't actually have the key to the Bitcoin on the chain, then it's not really your Bitcoin. So if you hear about FTX, you hear about all these exchanges that are falling apart, the exchanges, they held the Bitcoin. You had a right to that Bitcoin, but it wasn't actually your Bitcoin. They have custody of your Bitcoin. And so what I would say is make sure that you have your own custody, or it's non-custodial. And Unchained Capital is one that I would highly recommend, where you actually have the password, in essence, to your Bitcoin, as opposed to somebody else having it. And so own your own Bitcoin is my number one thing. And you will not have any issues with the FTX, the Binance, those folks of the world who are crumbling. So own your own Bitcoin.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Andy. This has been really interesting. Everything from what you're doing with Cloud Health all the way towards Bitcoin. I think these are two just fascinating topics that you're working on. It sounds like there's an interesting combination with the two of them, where you're really trying to get rid of that middleman with the insurance side of things and let people take control of their own lives. And you also get that a little bit with the Bitcoin side as well, where you can go away from the US dollar and not have to worry about all of those issues. Just have one more question to end on. Like, sure. If we go back to Crowd Health for a second, if we fast forward, let's say 5-10 years, where do you want to take Crowd Health?
Yeah, I think we could talk about numbers and what our goals are, but in essence, what our mission is that everybody has access to a way of navigating and paying for healthcare outside of your legacy health insurance. We just want to give people access. Look, if you want to do health insurance and you like health insurance, stay with health insurance. If you want something else, then we really want to give you an alternative to do something other than having health insurance. And so that's our goal. Give everybody access to it. And we hope that results in millions of people signing for Crowd Health. If it's hundreds of thousands, we'll be happy too. But we just really want to give people access to an alternative.
Perfect. So once again, we'll definitely leave your LinkedIn in the show notes, as well as a link out to Crowd Health. Thank you again for coming on the podcast. I think that this has been really interesting to just learn about both of these topics.
Yeah, no problem. And if there's any docs out there that would like to be involved with Crowd Health, we've got people all over the country. We will send them your way. If you're interested in taking cash or Bitcoin at the point of care, you can email us at docs@joincrowdhealth.com.
Fantastic. Thank you again, Andy.
Thanks, man. Good to be here.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky, and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate podcast.